Okay, so last week we spoke about what happens when the scientific facts, scientific assumptions that halacha is based on turn out to be mistaken. This week what I want to talk about is a related series of points, though slightly different, which is how does halacha react when either new manuscripts are found, which show that the girsot we had of Gemaras or Rishonim were incorrect, or stam, we find new Rishonim that we didn't have, and now the canon is expanded beyond, for the sake of argument for a moment, Shulchan Aruch had at his disposal. And the third related point is what happens when archaeological evidence changes the what we assumed about halacha. Okay. Basically, conceptually, these are all equivalent, so we can do them in one fell swoop. You'll see these makaras sheets are a little bit long. They're not particularly complicated. A lot of it is, I cut out the main part of the most recent tradition article on the topic, which summarizes a lot of what's been done, but more because I want to deal with the theoretical arguments rather than what... There have been three articles in tradition simply on what was the position of the Chazon Ish. Right? I don't think this is the most important thing in the world, because whatever the Chazon Ish meant, and there's a little bit, lack of clarity about what the Chazon Ish meant, right? He's not the only posek in the world. So even if he held something, if it turns out the rest of the poskim don't accept that position, doesn't matter. And even if the Chazon Ish didn't hold something, but everyone construes him as saying it, and therefore that is their perception of how they should poskim, that's also critical. So we'll see as we go. Okay, so first thing about manuscripts. It is 100% clear that the Rishonim did manuscript work. Okay? We're very clear, right? The Rishonim were not afraid of what we call lower criticism, right? Correcting girsos. In fact, you read a Gemara, you know this, right? Rashi, every 10 lines, hachi garsinan, lo garsinan, like this, etc., etc. Tosfos, Ramban, Ritva, doesn't matter, right? Clearly, they have girsos that are in flux. There are many, many manuscripts around, and they are trying to figure out the correct girsa of the Gemara. This is a given. It is undeniable. This is part of the reason that the Bavli is easier to read than the Yerushalmi, because on the Yerushalmi it wasn't learned, girsa work was not done. The Yerushalmi has floating letters, floating words, right? The person who printed the Yerushalmi thought that it was a good idea, that if he couldn't make out a word, he would write down the letters that he did see, and therefore you have floating letters in the middle of Yerushalmi. And this is the big difference between Bavli and Yerushalmi, right? Bavli was edited over the course of centuries and millennia. The Yerushalmi was not. Just to give you some examples, right? Rambam. Two examples. Lefi, Shara'iti, Shibush Gadol B'chol Esvarim, Shara'iti V'dorim Elu. Since I was reading this Gemara, I have no idea what's going on. I saw there's a lot of mistakes, right? So the first one is from Torah, right? This is writing of a Sefer Torah. Sorry, this is not the Gersa one yet, right? Simply, how do the Parshios come out? How are Pesukim written, etc.? I've seen that there is much confusion about how these Svarim are written. And people argue which codex should be used, or which Sefer Torah, right, depending on what they're using, to write our Sefer Torah. So I've decided I'm going to write all the Stumot and Ptuchot, write all the Parshiot as they appear in the Torah, so everybody can edit their Sefer Torah from mine. The Sefer, Sesemachna lo b'dvaram, Elu ha-Sefer ha-Yadu b'mitzrayim shu kolel arba v'esrim, Tzoreim shayi b'Yerushalayim mikam ha-shanim, la'giyem imenu ha-tzoreim, v'alea ayu ha-kol samchim, l'fi she'igu ben asher, v'dik bo shanim harbei, v'igu pamim rabot, k'mo she'etiku, v'alav samachli b'sefer ha-Torah shkodavti gilchoto. And I relied on the Aleppo Codex. Right? Everyone knows the Aleppo Codex, right? There were two main Bali Mitzvara, Ben Asher and Ben Naftali. Ben Naftali, is that right? I got that right. I'm really tired, so it could be. Ben Asher, yeah. So Ben Asher wrote, allegedly, the Aleppo Codex, which is passed down for generations. It's a whole fascinating story. There's a whole book on it. You can borrow it from me. If the person who borrowed it before I left America ever gave it back to me. But now that I think about it, I don't think he did. Or you can go to the Israel Museum, you can see the Aleppo Codex, right? The same one that Rambam used, right? It's very, very cool. So you see, right? terms of writing the Sefer Torah, the Rambam said, look, I see there's a lot of mistakes. What did I do? I went back to the best manuscript we have, the Aleppo Codex, and I corrected it. Right? Other people have used other codexes, but the idea is clear. Now, this was extremely controversial, not in the time of the Rambam, but, you know, recently. Has anyone ever noticed, you look at the Frankel Rambam, has anyone ever noticed the bizarreness of the numbering? Right? You have two Zions, and you have and things like that. And Ava was the most recent Sefer published. Anyone notice this? Anyone know why? Because of this. Because the Rambam's Parshios in the Sefer Torah do not accord with the ones with the Sefer Torah we have. So it's extremely controversial, right? Okay. Fine. But it's clear, right? Rambam, in terms of writing Sefer Torah, is happy to use manuscripts. In terms of halacha, next halacha. Yesh nuschaot min ha-gemara shekotev behen sha'omer l'chaver al tefreni elo be'idim amar l'peraticha. Without getting to the details of this case, right? There are girsos in the Gemara that say X. Vitos sofermu, right? Next line, vitos sofermu, it is a mistake. L'ficha tohu amorim al pi'osan asvarim. And therefore, the people who paskin made a mistake. Ukvar chakarti ala nuschaot ha-yishanot matzati behenshu ne'eman. V'yagia li'adi b'mitzrayim. Nixas Gemara Yishana calls of Gvilim Kamosha Yukosim Kodan Lizmanazeh, the car of Chamesh Me'ot Shana. But I went and I found a manuscript and held all the corrections from 500 years ago, Shtainus Chod Matsati, Minag Vilim Balachazo, and I found the two different versions of this manuscript, Ushtaim Kosov, etc., 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 and both of them wrote as I wanted to paskin. Upnei Ta'uzo She'ira L'miktas Esverim, Horu Mixes Agonim X, and because of the mistake the Gaonim had in their text, they paskined against the way I do. All right, skip to the next line. Gamara Azot Al Pi Sifrayin, Jekosuven, etc. And then the Rambam, right, he looked through it, right, rejects their halacha because they're based on false girsos. Right, very simple. So it is very clear. You look through the Rishonim, they do manuscript work. And they paskin based on manuscript work. Okay? You know, I could have brought many passages. There's this fun series of passages in Bava Metzia, both in the Ramban and the Ritva, where they forget girsos. They take a Gemara and they say this whole Amud is written by Rav Yehuda Gaon and reject the entire thing, la-halacha. Right? These things happen. No one argues on that. What do they argue? What do you think they argue? What? Well, no one argues the Rambam did it and that we can pass on like the Rambam. What do they argue? Can we do it? Why? And this is not a Yerides Hadoros thing, but it's a more subtle argument.
Because their study of yourselves was, they were trying to figure out what it should have said, and perhaps some of our research work is based on what, finding actual texts.
So sometimes it's simply, right, the Rishonim are like better at it, right? They, right, Girsa work is a combination of manuscripts and Svara, because, right, sometimes you actually correct a Girsa perfectly, based totally on Svara. In fact, right, traditionally amongst people who are doing Girsa work, right, if you have a series of manuscripts, which text is usually the right one? What? Well, actually the worst one. The one that's the least likely because people who edit to make things better, the more likely one to be old is the one that is less coherent, but not the one that is totally incoherent. Right, the rule goes like this. The rule in Latin is called Lectio del Facilior Patuar, or just Lectio del Facilior, which is the weaker text is the stronger. Right? Okay? But that has its limits, and as Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik has once said, when applying Lectio del Facilior, you have to have a head on your shoulders and not a pumpkin. Okay? So, but that's like basically, right, girsa work. What? It's a very crass way to say it. Okay. But what they basically say is, like, first of all, who are we to change the girsos? Not because girsos work is inherently possible, but because, look, it's a combination of text, it's a combination of svara, and we're not able to do that. More importantly is that halacha hadn't yet been decided, right? There wasn't, like, codification going on that early. Right, or not binding codification. So, like, halacha was slightly more in a flux. But later, halacha is less in flux because of Shulchan Aruch. So we will see that as we go. But you cannot argue that at some point in history, the proper girsa was important for Pesach. Okay, if you continue, you'll look in the Ramar. He also says, Next point. Step one is manuscripts. Step two is new Rishonim, right? It's a similar question, right? Obviously, at some point in history, in the Gemara, for example, new Shittos were relevant halachically, right? If somebody had two brises in front of him, and then another Amora comes in and says, by the way, Shmuel quoted a brisa from, blah, 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 that said X, so then they would paskin like X, or they would potentially paskin like X, or they would have to be miyashivit and say, it doesn't mean that, or there's a stira, whatever. But clearly, at some point in history, different Shittos made a difference, right? In Rishonim, when Shittos are still being produced en masse, and information takes a long time to travel, you'll see the Ramban will say, I paskin this way, and then I heard the Raven paskin this way, etc. But, right, the argument goes for some people, that's true until, Shulchan Aruch or something, where a decent number of positions have already been brought to halacha, but now we're not going to overturn halacha based on new Shittos. But if you look on the Ramah is still open to rejecting Shittos based on older positions. If you look at the Ramah, he says, "Avam nimtzal lefamim tshuvas gaon ulala shulchan Aruch sefer." If sometimes you find a tshuva of a gaon, I don't think it means after the gaonim, but if you find a sefer that hadn't been mentioned, the halacha, v'nimtzach and cholken alav. You don't necessarily have to paskin like the later poskim, because had they seen the earlier poskim, they wouldn't have paskin the way they did. Okay, so let's just bring an example, right? First example I want to bring is from Eruvin. Right? I tried to bring some. There are fascinating examples which are not really Nogei Lamaisa, but I wanted to do some that are Nogei Lamaisa, so you see how this actually plays out. First one is Eruvin. Okay. So, Reb Lichtenstein has said publicly many times that perhaps the most difficult of all heterim that exists in the world is Eruvin. Period. Full stop. Right? When I was in yeshiva, he gave a sicha, and someone asked him about chumras, and after a whole discussion of chumras, he said, there are some chumras that are so close to Ikar Adin, I would tell you should keep them even your parents are screaming, are kicking and screaming, like all Eruvin and Chos Laretz. This is why I don't carry. So, I do carry in a lunch foot, but it's a different story. So one of the Shittos that many Eruvin are based on, the less these days, is, well, what are Eruvin based on? That our Rishus HaRabim is not a Rishus HaRabim because 600,000, right? It doesn't have 600,000 people. And Shulchan Aruch, an early poskim, all said, well, it's a little bit odd, but it's the majority position Rishonim. So, Mishkanos Yaakov, in a very, very, very long tshuva, which I did not reproduce for you, but I put the Aruch HaShulchan summary of it, did the very careful work and said, look, this is much later than some of the other people writing. We have a lot new Rishonim. Let me start counting. And these were his conclusions. So look at the Aruch HaShulchan. He says, Valpi Shitazu. Namely, the Shita that is not Rosh Hashanah, unless there are 600,000 people. Have they called Heter Eruvin Shemimino Seinu? This is the basis of all Eruvin. Because our cities don't have 600,000 people, and therefore Tzuras HaPesach works. Right, basically the issue that's going on is that if there are shittos, that if something is Rishus HaRabim Daraisa, it's Rishus HaPesach, Erev won't help you, you need a Delet. Obviously, most Erevin we have are simply Rishus HaPesach. Therefore, if there, in fact, it's Rishus HaRabim Daraisa, you would have to use a Rishus HaPesach and not a Delet. So therefore, he says, so how do we build Erevin with Rishus HaPesach? Because we paskin, there's no problem if there's no 600,000 people. V'nei, and he said, before Shei Shulchan Aruch Kos, with the Rova Boskim Sovrim, Kishita Zo. Why did the Taz and the Magen Avraham paskin like the Shita? Because most Boskim held this way. Ha'omnam, however, Echad Me'agdolim B'dor Shalafaneinu, Hir Ish Ha'olam Alar Erevin Shalanu. One of the Gedolim recently, right, stormed the world. And he said, and Mishkanes Yaakov did the count, and he said, no, when you count up the Rishonim that we know, the Rove are Machmir, Hema, Sefer Truma, Smak, Smak, Rami Rittenberg, Rush, Torah, Omnim, Chitas, Rashi, Zalba, Osrim, Hema, Harifa, Ram, Ramim, Tam, Rash, Bam, Ravon, Rabban, Rash, Bavar, Dvar, Ran, Ramag, Mishnah, Rivash, Vikam, Bela, Tosas, Arash, Barishan, Rivav, Rialevi, Aram, Riaz, Vigam, Rash, Abiyam, Sir, Shlomo, Hechriya, Shiloh, Kishita, Zo. It's like 4 verses 20. Ulevanze, furthermore, Hericho, Livar, Digam, Governor, Rashi, Nashishim, Rabba, Overn, Botamid. Besides for that, they misunderstood Rashi, etc. But then if you skip down 4 lines, the Aruch HaShulchan concludes, Aval Alkol Panim, Mamol Arichos Acharei She'arivin Nitvashdu Berov Ari Yisrael Harmimot Shanim Mikodem Arach Asmach Heter Zeh V'ki'ilu Baskol Yatza Halacha Kishita Zeh V'imbanu La'akev Lo Levad Shalo Yitzaytu Elanira Kimishtagim B'davar Zeh Nisbash B'chol Yisrael V'poskim Da'idna Einlan Roshis HaRabim Rak Barim Sifurot V'agadalot Ba'olam Kamo Arim Elucha Shem Shishim Ribo Avalo Barim Shalano V'yan Ki Mitzvah V'chov V'lam Yitzchus Al Kal Yisrael Chitzam Diz Libi La'amtzi Eze Het Der Kamoshin V'arabis Yad Dishmaya. However, the Aruch HaShulchan has a hard time believing that all of Erevin are puzzled, because he says, look, we've been holding this way for hundreds of years, ki'ilu baskol yatsa, and said that we paskin like this, even though it's against the Shittos. And the Aruch HaShulchan ends up providing other heterim in the later Simanim. But he basically puts the problem forward. Where the Mishkanes Yaakov takes a very strong position. When new Rishonim come, what do? We include them, and we change halacha.
Which new Rishonim are there here?
Well, they didn't have these. Magen Avraham and Taz had very limited libraries.
Oh, you're saying the Magen Avraham and the Taz didn't
have them. Yeah. This is the Mishkanes Yaakov's list. This they don't have. They had like 5 Rishonim that they were counting, or 10, but not, you know.
In Yud Zayin, we're just talking about the number of Rishonim, which Mishkanes Yaakov brings up. But even if we're Rishonim have one side, it doesn't need to be that we don't necessarily need to pass them over. Maybe there is a Shutin Seekout. You don't have to go by a Rishonim, but if you don't, then...
Hold it for just 2 seconds. But yes, right? But before we get into that detail, right, the Mishnah is Yaakov puts out the position that, look, if new posts can become available, we integrate them into Psak and potentially overturn Psak. And the Aruch HaShulchan is not thrilled with this possibility. He says, look, this is our Psak. But he doesn't spell out why, right? And he doesn't make a sort of universal claim. He just says that, at least in the case of the Erevin, right, it can't be that we Paskin like these positions. But look for a moment that it should Beis Ephraim. So Beis Ephraim says like this. He said, look, it doesn't matter. Why? Because the Beis Yosef didn't paskin like this. Who cares? Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, right? Paskin, at least plausibly, like Rashi. So who cares? V'ayin ba'urim b'tumim. B'kuvah v'atizah she'ein alahamid yisod al-masha nir-leininu ke'ele poskim him rabim. Sha'af imimtza sharif ha-rambam poskim ke'en mi'odeh kama chokim v'kama b'poskim asher heima odam b'ksuvim v'kima v'kiblo aleim chachmeador l'shmor v'la'asos kachras mechabur amma ba'gozal. So the Beit Ephraim makes a systematic critique of the Mishkanes Yaakov's methodology, and he quotes the Urim B'tumim. So the Urim V'Tumim, Yosef Eibshitz, says the following svara. Yaakov, I'm going to test you for a second. Right? Does the rule, Holech Achar Harov, or Achar Rab Mahatos, apply to Machlokes Bizman Azeh?
Yeah. No.
No? Good. Why? Okay, I won't test you. It's fine. Why?
Because they're talking about makes them a single unit that makes it a rogue.
So one is a very formal reason. We'll get back to this when we get to Psikat al-Chabashat Chak. One is the formal reason, the Chazaner says, that there's no Nimnu v'Gamru. Is that Achai Rab Mahatos is a rule in Bezdin. But more importantly, right? Well, not more importantly, but more simple, more balabatish, right? Please define rove for me. Define rove. What would it mean for Rove Poskim to Paschal in one way?
I suspect greater than 50%.
Good. 50% of who?
Of, say, Poskim.
What, who said Poskim?
Hence, there's no group of what is the Poskim they're making the Rove of.
More importantly, yeah.
Whatever group you pick, once you have the Rove of that group, it doesn't matter if there are others, because you just
So let's say it's looking back at history, right? So give me any estimation of who's Rove, of who am I talking about? Anybody. Like, just pick something random, I don't care. Let's say I would possibly Rove Rishonim. Good. Who are the Rishonim?
We just had a list of many.
Good. Well, what about, let's say the Orzar Rov didn't write about Erevin. I mean, he did. But let's say, right, the Smok didn't write about Erevin, right? So does he count as a Rishon or not?
Isn't that what he didn't say?
Well, maybe he didn't write it. Maybe he poskened it. And what about, you know, the rabbi who was the Rav of Prague in, you know, I don't know, in the 13th century that I happen not to know his name because he never wrote things down or we lost his manuscripts. Right? The Urim and Thummim makes a very simple Balabatish point, which is, it's impossible to define Rove, because what would Rove plausibly be? Rove kol chachmi Yisrael orech hadoros. But not everyone wrote, and not everyone wrote about everything, and even the people who did write, it's not recorded, right? So it's completely arbitrary for me to say, it's Rove of the written works that I happen to have at this moment. Which means that Achari Rav Mahatos is not really, and we'll see, people argue on this, but this is the position of the Thummim, and actually, perhaps the only time they ever agree, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, right? Rove just doesn't work at some point because you don't know. Now, that doesn't mean it's not important, right? Because look, it is true that if 1,000 poskim that we know of say X and 3 poskim say the opposite, that gives it a lot of weight because, right, that it's not a formal dinner Rove, it's just simply the overwhelming consensus of Psak seems to think this is mistaber. But the formal dinner Rove doesn't seem, for good reason, doesn't seem to apply. So that's the Tumim's principle. So the Beis Ephraim critiques the Mishkan of Yaakov and says, look, it's not just that, look, everyone's been relying on Eruvin. It's that you are saying that what? When new Rishonim come in, we should overturn Psak. I'm going to say no. Because why would we overturn Psak? Because a new Shita comes in and does what? Well, at least in the case of Mishkan of Yaakov, we're not talking about introducing a new Shita, we're talking about changing the numbers. Saying numbers, who cares about numbers? Numbers are important in a case of Nimnu Vigamru. But here, there's no formal way of figuring it out, and these numbers don't prove anything, right? Because look, if everyone possibly like Rashi, so maybe Rove Olam was like Rashi, no one bothered saying it, because they all agreed. Right? You have no idea. So therefore, we have to rely on other mechanisms. What mechanism do we rely on? We rely on Shulchan Aruch and Rama. So here is the first sort of fundamental machlokas we have, which is when we're talking about introducing new Rishonim, not new positions, right? That was the case of the Ramah, but new Rishonim to increase numbers, the Mishkan of Yaakov says, look, we bring in whatever evidence we have and we reassess as we learn more. Beis Ephraim says, no, because new numbers doesn't necessarily prove anything, we go by the tried and true rules of Psak, which we follow, Shulchan Aruch Ramah. Okay? Yeah.
I mean, everybody sort of agrees with this to a certain extent. Beit Yosef, once he picks, you know, 3 Rishonim to go by, I mean, he's automatically disqualifying everybody else and saying it's not really Rove, it's Rove of the 3 I picked, and therefore...
Right, so the Beit Yosef, right, obviously is picking an arbitrary Rove also, which, as we saw, he doesn't always hold like it.
Okay, but...
Right, but yeah, meaning... But it's not the formal rule of Rove, but yeah, I mean, that's basically the Tumim's... I mean, the Beit Yosef is making the same big argument, right, that we don't have to take everybody into account. Now, the question where you draw the line is a little bit... That's important. Okay, so Reuven had a question.
Like methodologically, the Arab Shulchan, at least here, seems like the only. Like, it's not just that, like, says this is what we do, it's also like to be Malamit's close and like to add Nisir.
I mean, yes, but he. Yes.
So, but
the Arab Shulchan is always hard to tell what he believes, what's a Limit's close and whatever, and you'll see. I mean, we won't get into it because his actual position, Erevin, is unique.
Okay.
Which is, I would rather rely on the 600,000 person position.
But just, like, is it. Could you say that like, you have to take whether you say like, to include new Rishonim or the count of Psak, either way you take yes or no, do you have to take that consistently or can you have like a different method like you always want to be Makil regardless either way? Like,
always want to be Makil, we have a problem. If you always want to be Machmir, we also have a problem. But I think you can bring other considerations, I don't think those are them. Right?
Like,
Shitati being Makil, being Machmir is a problem.
Do you have to take one specific error?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, meaning, we'll see the Chazanish sort of does, but I don't think you have to. And Matthew, yeah? Okay, fine. So we have so far, first thing we have was new texts, right? We saw them, time of the Rishonim, It was standard practice. People corrected Gersos and they paskin based on them. Second question is new Rishonim completely. There, the Rama says, we are allowed to paskin like Rishonim that we didn't have because people might have held differently. And the third issue is not new positions, but more people holding a position that we didn't know about. Mishkanos Yaakov is willing to embrace it in the base of Fine, based on the Tumim, says, look, because we don't actually know what Rove is, and we're not talking about a formal Rove, so it doesn't really matter how many people said what. We want to rely on other formal rules, and Shulchan Aruch and Rama is that sort of moment in history where we draw the line. Okay. Sort of the strongest person who took the position that post Shulchan Aruch, we don't look at manuscripts, we don't look at New Rishonim, we don't look at anything, is allegedly, this is very complicated, the Chazon Ish. Right? There are three articles in tradition about the Chazon Ish's position on this issue. One was written in 80, one was written as a response in 81, and the first one was, I forget his name, 81 is Schneer Lyman, and then in 2000, and then in 93, Moshe Bleich wrote another article, which right, argued on Lyman, and was much more expansive than either of those. So I want to read you his analysis for a little bit, which will capture some of the issues. So, it must be noted that Tumim's position appears to be self-limiting. It seems apparent that Tumim claims that the rulings of Shulchan Aruch and Rama occupy a privileged place because, one, of their universal acceptance, and two, because the divine spirit guided Reus of Cairo and Ramosha Israelis in the codification of Shulchan Aruch. Tumim presumably does not accord similar status to the rulings of later authorities. In all likelihood, Tumim would concede that insofar as later authorities whose decisions did not receive this widespread and final the definitive acceptance are concerned, the information that comes to light as a result of newly found manuscripts, manuscript sources not to be ignored, and accordingly the rulings of those later authorities may be disputed on the basis of such manuscripts. However, as we discussed below, Moshe Sternbach extends this concept even to later authorities. Okay? So, what he already points out is that even the Tumim's principle is self-limiting, because Tumim drew an arbitrary line and said, pre-X it was important, new Rishonim, new manuscripts, post-X it isn't. Where did he draw that line? He drew the line of Shulchan Aruch, which obviously means that let's say we would find something that is still a machlokes in Shulchan Aruch, or is still a machlokes amongst the Nosei Kalim, or something that's live after Shulchan Aruch, manuscripts would be important. Right? So you still have to ask, well, is it possible to draw the line even later? So what he points out is, yes, Ramosha Sternbach does draw it even later. The example here is selling chametz. Shulchan Aruch HaRav here says, Shemocher l'nachri esachidir tzarech litol me'anachri kesef o shvei kesef v'ad kol me'amechiro shiikach mat kesef o shvei kesef v'ad ashar yamid lo erev kablon shishalim lo zman piron shikava l'nachri v'gam yechtov lo shtar mechiro shein nachri kona karkov lo kesef v'vad lo chazak lo shtar again, Shemocher is bar I'll call ish asher yiraz Hashem nagabi libo lo tis yidei kol adeos mechiro is chamesh him mechiro gemur lo dirai akol yechtov ashtar mechiro kenosach hakosev v'sidr. Shulchan Aruch HaRav had the following problem. When we sell chametz, how do we sell it? What kinyan do we use?
Everything we can think of.
That is what we do. Right? Why? Because even though Shulchan Aruch takes a definitive stand on which kinyanim apply to a guy and which don't, since Shulchan Aruch, we've discovered many, many more Rishonim, and it's turned out that it's very unclear. Right? We know that some kinyanim apply to Goyim and some don't, and we don't know which ones. Shulchan Aruch HaRav's decision was, look, since we know there are more Shitos, we have to contend with them, and it doesn't matter that it was Nifzak and Shulchan Aruch, and therefore, we do every kinyan known to man, right? You've been to a kinyan? Okay. Good. So, if you look at the analysis next, thus, Shulchan Aruch HaRav was prepared to accept the material in new manuscripts, even when halachic positions contained therein different from the rulings of Shulchan Aruch. It is important to note, however, that in this instance, the novel positions reflecting the manuscript material necessitated a halachic revision in nature of astringency. It does not necessarily follow that Shulchan Aruch HaRav would have prepared to accept the leniency based on a new manuscript evidence contrary to the ruling of Shulchan Aruch. Right? So Moshe Bleich pointed out that, look, Shulchan Aruch HaRav is willing to accept post Shulchan Aruch, previous texts, but all we have evidence of the Shulchan Aruch is that we can be machmir. We have not yet gotten to the point of being mekel, right? Also, Mishkanos Yaakov is being machmir. Reb Moshe Sternbach affirms the primacy of the rulings incorporated in Shulchan Aruch in explaining why the position of Shulchan Rav with regard to Seil Chametz was not accepted. Reb Sternbach declares, "For we have received a tradition from the great Torah authorities of the preceding generations of blessed memory. The rulings of Shulchan Aruch are not changed, as explained as a result of the discovery of manuscripts, even those authored by the great early day scholars. Their reason may be explained as follows. The Holy Spirit shined forth in the house of study of the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and the acknowledged decisors according to the rulings of all house of Israel conducting themselves for many generations. Accordingly, it is incumbent upon us to continue in their path, even if we now find manuscripts of some early day authorities whose path is not the same. It is noteworthy that the view herein expressed by Sternbach is virtually identical with that formulated by Tumim. As I said earlier, however, Sternbach brought into this concept to encompass not only the rulings of Shulchan Aruch and Rabbah, but also the rulings of later day prominent halachic decisors whose decisions have been accepted as binding by Klal Yisrael over the generations." Okay, so let's summarize what we have so far because it's complicated, right? So, first thing we dealt with was mistakes in manuscript, right? Second thing is new Rishonim. Second thing was new positions that come from new Rishonim. And the third thing is new numbers that come from Rishonim. So, Mishkanos Yaakov is willing to, even when it comes to numbers, overturn Psak, simply based on numbers of new Rishonim. On the level of numbers, Beis Ephraim rejects him and says, no, based on the Tumim, since we don't actually know that the Rove has changed, therefore we follow other rules of Psak, Shulchan Aruch, Rama are binding. We do not try to overturn Psak by looking back at new numbers. That doesn't necessarily follow that we would reject the Rama's ruling, namely that new positions entirely couldn't change the halachic process, but at least in terms of numbers, it wouldn't. Shulchan Aruch HaRav's case is about new positions, right? And there, Shulchan Aruch HaRav is willing to be machmir and say that we need to employ more forms of kinyan when selling chametz because Shulchan Aruch didn't know about these positions, right? All he proves is that we can be machmir when it comes to new positions, but at least we already see someone who's actually accepting new positions, not just changing the numbers. And even to that, Reb Moshe Sternbach projects, even when it's going the direction of Chumrah, because he thinks that Shulchan Aruch, and now he adds, not only Shulchan Aruch, but the Nosei Kelim and later Poskim, are guided by sort of the Spirit of God, and therefore Psak as we have it is binding, regardless of whether historically we would have guessed that would have gone in this direction. Okay? We're good so far? Now, to the analysis of the Chazon Ish himself. Okay, because the Chazon Ish, yeah.
Wait, so the Rama says that if it's a new position, it's really must take into consideration?
We must consider it. It doesn't mean you have to paskin like it,
but
right?
If it's a new position, then that automatically puts us in the minority, in which case... So, essentially saying that in the end, we don't hold by that new shita?
No, meaning if... The same way the majority rule thing tells you that... We don't necessarily rely on numbers, tells you that sometimes we can rely on Shitas Yachid. Right? Or, right, I mean, because it's not formally rejected. The Shach doesn't think anything I'm saying is true. We'll see that when we get to Psikat al Chabashat Tchak. But, fine. Okay. Now, the battle over this is, again, traditionally taken to be the position of the Chazon Ish. So what I have here is the Chazon Ish, translation of the Chazon Ish with an analysis by the same Moshe Bleich. Okay, this verse is a translation of the Chazon Ish, and he says, "I do not know whether it is possible to rely on works that are newly printed, since the Masorah has been interrupted among us, and we do not know the identity of the copyists, for the work of copying is very difficult." So the first point he makes is, why shouldn't we rely on new manuscripts, new Rishonim, new whatever?
Mistakes,
right? This is what we said before, is that practically, they may not be right. Just because they're new doesn't make them right. Even when carried out by persons who are alacritous and meticulous, many textual errors are commonly found. I admit it transpires that there is even a slight laxity in scrutiny. The meaning of the entire matter can be totally changed. Therefore, we must deem the words of the authorities from whom the transmission of the Masorah to us was not interrupted throughout all the generations, and whose works are guarded assiduously by the scholars of each generation to preserve them and to correct them to be more accurate. All the more so, it is difficult to rely upon any new text in instances in which it is not possible to make a determination on the basis of the import of the text, but rather on the basis of inference from its terminology. Errors in transcription or copying are frequent and common. So Chazon Ish, right, pretty chad mashmei, rejects the use of new manuscripts la halacha. So Rabbi Bleich continues here, and he says, In the introduction to his Hebrew manuscripts, The Treasured Legacy, Binyamin Reichler discusses some of the difficulties involved in the transcription of manuscripts and texts. Right? He astutely remarks, it is almost impossible to copy a written text of moderate length without making at least a few errors. Even if a scribe were to copy a 300-page book containing 10,000 words with 99.5% accuracy, he would still be responsible for 500 mistakes about the book. In practice, few scribes approach such accuracy. The possibilities for error are immense. The script in the original may be smudged or illegible. Two lines a few inches apart might begin or end with the same word, and the scribe might inadvertently skip from one line to another, omitting the text in between. The scribe may be a layman, ignorant of the subject matter he is copying, and encountering an unfamiliar word, may copy it incorrectly. A scribe may incorporate into the text critical notes written on the margin, even though they were never written by the author. An assistant to the scribe who reads the text next to him might substitute homonyms of similar-sounding words. Right? So he bolsters the Chazon Ish's point and says, look, there's good reason not to rely on new manuscripts, because new manuscripts are infamously riddled with mistakes. Now, the question of, well, he continues, the question of emendation of rabbinic texts of the Talmudic period in light of new discoveries is a significant one. His discussion of this subject, Professor Lyman cites at length the communication of Chazon Ish in Kovetz Igros. You sought to explain a sugya and to amend a Talmudic passage in accordance with the reading of the Mudic manuscript. Do you suppose then that the true sense of the passage eluded all the leading scholars from the period of the Rishonim until today? Right. So here we start to see the Chazon Ish not just his practical critique, but the Beis Ephraim critique, the Ramadim Simcha, the Ramadim Zmanim critique, or the fundamental critique. Right. Hashem's spirit, right, guided it, and it's right. This you're making, right, this is already the ideological claim, and all because of one scribal error that led to a conflated text which misled all scholars. I will have none of it. The Rishonim would prepare to lay down their lives on behalf of their manuscripts. God's providence hovered over them so that Torah would not be forgotten in Israel. When they set about to publish the Talmud, the leading sages of the generation were prepared to lay down their lives in order to produce a correct text. If on occasion we benefit from manuscripts and they clear up errors that accrued throughout the generations, this provides no license to amend a text that was approved by all our sages, by the slightest doubt being raised, heaven forbid that we destroy. On the basis of this letter, Professor Lyman concludes that the Chazon Ish would not have looked kindly upon a textual emendation that contradicts previously accepted authorities, but that when the emendation is necessary and persuasive and is supported by parallel texts, Chazon Ish would welcome such emendation. However, that quotation is incomplete. The very letter concludes with a cautionary note. Chazon Ish writes, think to yourself, when we have three manuscripts before us and two are identical, we accept the two and ignore the single manuscript. Who can tell us that the Munich manuscript is not the one that was nullified in the majority of manuscripts in its time? And who is to tell us that it was not known to be inaccurate? Conclusion, the status of many manuscripts now being published is somewhat different from those published in the past, of recently published manuscripts, especially those under the aegis of Moshe Rav Kook, Yadar of Herzog, Machon Yerushalayim, which are of high quality and evident meticulous scholarship. One may say, Achshar Dara, scrupulous care has been taken to demonstrate authenticity of authorship and to correct mistakes that have crept into the text. Extensive footnotes chronicle passages that are not entirely comprehensible and explain the lacuna of words or phrases. The reader is cautioned not to draw a definitive conclusion based upon the reconstructed text. Thus, from a scholarly standpoint, many pitfalls that have been associated with manuscripts in the past have been avoided, and these newly published texts certainly enhance Talmudic literature. Nevertheless, for halachic purposes, it is the consensus of contemporary authorities that inordinate weight not be given to newly published material. Even earlier authorities who gave a relatively high degree of credence to newly discovered manuscripts did so within a limited context. Accordingly, formulation of novel halachic positions and adjudication of halachic disputes on the basis of such sources can be taken only with extreme caution. Okay. So that's sort of the summary of Chazon Ish's position. The Chazon Ish makes two basic fundamental claims. One is that manuscripts are notoriously, right, corrupt, and you don't even know, right, whether the text you have in your hand represents multiple texts, right? It could be the two versus one. The one itself is the corrected text, and the two are corrupt. You have no idea. And the second is a fundamental claim, which is that ideologically, it can't be that we would overturn previous psak based on manuscripts. Now, that presumably applies also to new Rishonim, and famously, the Chazon Ish therefore was not Machshav the Meiri for psak pretty much ever. Maybe once in a while, but pretty much, right, he rejected the Meiri from his canon when it came to halacha. Okay. So we have so far is the following, right? First thing, again, we spoke about, right, three issues. Manuscript changing your source, new positions, new numbers of Rishonim. Mishkanes Yaakov, we saw, is happy to accept new Rishonim, even for numbers, and right, there's no reason to believe that that position can't be carried on to manuscripts. And like, it's sort of the same idea. The Ramah explicitly takes new positions into account. On the other hand, right, the Chazon Ish, Beis Ephraim, Moedim Uzmanim to different extents, saying no, even if that was true at some point in history, because of, well, first of all, practical issues, namely we can't be sure the new manuscripts are accurate, and two, fundamental issues, that halacha developed the way it developed, it doesn't matter how many positions there are, Rove doesn't officially apply, and there's a level of hashgacha pratis that guided the hand of Psak, we reject new girsos, new rishonim, new positions, and we paskin based on the normal rules of Psak. Okay? So these are sort of the two positions that exist out there to varying degrees, right? Do we draw the line in Shulchan Aruch? Do we draw it in the Sekelim? Do we make a distinction between new positions in Rishonim and new numbers of Rishonim? Do we make a distinction of one more position or 10 new positions or 100 new positions? Right? All those are sort of open, but those are sort of the two models on all of these issues. Rav Bleich's conclusion here is that the consensus of positions like the Chazon Ish, I slightly beg to differ. If you look, for example, in the next source that I put, Yabi Omer, Rav Avadia, Lechora, Yesh Lesayo Mizeh Bazeh Mimashikos Rav Yonos and Aishas Bisifro Hanora Hatumim Shechas V'Shalom Lomar Kimli Neged Hakras Marna Mechaber V'Ramak Yakol B'Ksav Miyad Hashem Yiskel Yadam Ruach Hashem Nosisah B'Kirbam V'Yos L'Sham Bazav M'Chonon L'Alacha Afli Kavanas HaKosev Ki Chavet Hashem B'Yadam Itzliach. I could support position X without getting to what position X is on the Tumim, who says that any new position is irrelevant because God guided the hands of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. V'chein gozav gaon mitzans v'agov mimins b'shur ha'gadol mikom ha'kom in zemuchrach sh'me'achar sh'divrei ha'rishon sh'nidzu achar das moron lo niglu leig nekadsho. He says this is not muchrach, and despite the fact that almost always Rav Avadia paskins like Shulchan Aruch, no matter what happens, doesn't matter. If there's a new Rishon, and Beis Yosef might have changed his mind, Yishlomar Dilu Shmiele Have Hader Bey Kein Mashkot Marana Chida Bereke Yosef. So, even though Rav Avadia would fight for Shulchan Aruch's Psak under all circumstances, there's one circumstance where he's willing to overturn it. And if you remember already a few weeks ago, we saw this is his methodology in general, right? By the reason he paskins that you should not stand up during a Aseres HaDibros is because Chuvas HaRambam, which people didn't see. Right? So there is sort of one, right off the bat, very glaring exception to this Chazon Ish rule, which is Rav Avadia. Okay. But these are the two positions that are out there. Now, Schneer Lyman, in his article, goes to great length to show that the Chazon Ish position is too extreme even for the Chazon Ish, and if you look through the Chazon Ish, it's not 100% clear that he was quite as sold on this theory that is ascribed to him as Rabbi Bleich would have you believe. Whether that's true or not is not the issue, but suffice it to say, it's not really clear, and you'll often find inconsistency, because people will, right, even the Moedim Uzmanim will, like, quote them Iri, right? So, like, it's not 100% clear, and we'll possibly get Shulchan Aruch. You know, so it's not exactly that everyone really is chad v'chalak on this issue. Parenthetically, and with this we'll move on to archaeology. So far, I've only picked out a few sort of sporadic examples. If you look through Psak, you will see that you will find both voices, and not necessarily consistently, but many people will come out on both sides. Right, depending on the issue. But it is a very prominent position amongst poskim to say that new manuscripts, new Rishonim, whether it's new positions or new numbers, are something we should be machshiv. Now, in any individual case, a posik has the right to say, you know, a new position in the Me'iri is not going to make me overturn the Pesach or Shulchan Aruch. Or, in this case, it seems like the Haskamas Klal Yisrael is to go like the Psak of the Ramah, even though it turns out that it's against most Rishonim, which often happens even on things that we know that he's against most Rishonim, will be possibly like the Ramah. But it's pretty accepted amongst many poskim that you at least have the option to seriously consider revising the accepted psak if it turns out that the assumptions of psak were mistaken because of a bad girsa or because of lack of information. Daniel Sperber, both in his book, Venitivot Psika, and Darka Shel Halakha, spends 100 pages.
Total.
What?
Total.
No, in each. In each. In one he has 13 examples, and the other one I think is whatever. Setting up a straw man. That's saying, all modern poskim don't understand how to poskin because they all reject... new texts, new Rishonim, new everything, and therefore I need to write two books of methodology of Psak to give people the proper tools, because without them, people will just poskin incorrectly. This is a straw man, right? And I didn't need his 13 examples throughout Rishonim and Achronim to tell me that it's relatively standard amongst poskim to, whether they're telling you or not, to take into account the Mi'iri, or the Ridva, who is actually relatively recent, that we have the whole Ridva, or a host of other things. You should just know, right? This is a straw man. It is not true. That being said, he does admit at one point that Rav Ovadia is one sole voice of reason. It's simply not true. Okay? Like, you look around, you'll see Rav Ovadia, but other poskim, we'll see in a moment, Rav Shechter is very strong like this. Poskim do take in, even the poskim who claim they don't, take in the Mi'iri. They take in many Rishonim that we didn't have. Maybe they're not doing the manuscript work, but they're happy to use the Mosad Rav Kook Rishonim and make new Diyuk in Rishonim. Or use Bar Ilan and use Achronim that weren't often quoted, right? We technically had them, but no one had them at their fingertips, right? Poskim... Right, if you look in, for example, Rav Henkin's Chuvos, you'll see that in Chelek Aleph and Beis, he writes in his Akdama and Chelek Gimel that in the third volume I started using Bar Ilan. In the first two volumes I didn't have Bar Ilan. By the third volume I have Project Ashut. Right? It's not unheard of. It is that people use it. And if you ask me my conclusion here, I would tell you very simple. I think it's not Chad v'Chalak. It is true that manuscripts often have mistakes. It is true that just because we have one new position in some Mi'iri or Shidim Kubetza somewhere, we're not going to overturn Psak. It's also true that we shouldn't ignore them. And if it turns out that overwhelmingly Psak is different than it looks like, that Psak should be different than the way it's been passed down, so it's plausible to overturn it. I'll give you an example. This is in my article, which at some point will come out, on going to bars, right? There's a machlokes shach and taz about going to parties of non-Jews. Right? So in Kufnun Bet. So the shach says that the iser is dirabanan. I've read the iser in the Gemara brought in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Dav Ches is dirabanan. And therefore, it's mutter mishum eva. And therefore, if they're going to cause animosity, so then it's mutter to go to a party. The Taz says no. It's an iser d'oraisa. And not only is it an iser d'oraisa, but if you look at the pasuk the Gemara quotes, it sounds like the point of it is lo yichrosu bris, the pentachros bris, is that you want to create a certain level of animosity, and therefore, it is usher even if it's going to cause animosity. Traditionally, when we have a machlokes shach taz, what do we paskin like? Traditionally, not always, but shach. Okay? Poskim tend to paskin like the shach. And the shach says, look, the taz is wrong. No one ever said it was daraisa. Turns out, all the Rishonim said it's daraisa. And the Ritva, the Raifit says it's daraisa. The Ritva says it's daraisa. And the Ritva, not only does it say it's daraisa, he makes the same point as the taz. Explicitly. And he says that, yeah, it's because it's Daraisa, and it's because of Pentachos Bris, it's Usur, even if it's going to call us animosity, because that, to some extent, is the point. It happened to be that to the Ashkenazi Nosei Kelim, the Ritva and the Ravid were lost. And they weren't completely lost. If you look in the Sephardi Poskim, The Sephardi Poskim had the Ritva and the Ravid, and they Poskim against the Taz, because they knew that the Ritva and the Ravid Poskim that way. The Erech HaShulchan Poskim that way explicitly. As does, and it's quoted also in Avraham Al-Kalai. So I remember I talked to Rav Shechter about this, and Rav Shechter took a Kedavar Pashut that we should Poskim like the Taz. Right? After I presented this evidence to him, right? He said we should Poskim like the Taz. Because look, here, this is not something which is prima facie a closed issue. It's Machlok Shach Taz. And it turns out that the Rishonic evidence that we didn't have supports the Taz, not the Shach. Okay. So that's for manuscripts, new textual evidence, etc. In the last few minutes, third one is archaeology. Which, now, we've already set up the conceptual issues here, right? The conceptual issues are exactly the same, pretty much, right? But first, let's read the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Bar Chana. The Gemara says, Zimna chada v'kazlana b'midbar. I was once going in the desert. V'itlu b'hadein ha'utaya. I met a certain Arab merchant. So Amarli, he said to me, Ta'chavilach m'sein midbar. Let me show you the people who died in the midbar. Right? I know where their graves are. So Ozli, I went. Chazinu v'damu kaman d'mizri v'ganu aparikid. So what did he do while he was there? Right, he grabbed tzitzis, right? Tchelta, right? He grabbed the tzitzis of one of the Mesa Midbar. Why? Because there's a machlokes b'shel beishamai how you tie. So what did he wanted to do? Well, it's very simple. Let me see what happened in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? So he goes over to the dead people and he takes their tzitzis. Right? And then they try to move and their animals are frozen and they can't move. So the Arab merchant said to him, Dilma Shakal, maybe you stole something from the dead people. So Ahadre digimire, the man the shakamide, minay, lomastagile. And I have a misura that we won't be able to move unless we give it back. So Ozlo Hadar Devam is Tagilon, right? So I returned the tzitzis and they let me go. Ki also made their abanan when I got back to the yeshiva, Amrili, call Avacham, call Baruchana Sikhsa, Lamay Hilchasa Avad Hachi, Lamaydai Kibisham Kibis Hillary. He said, why did you do this to figure out whether halach like Bishel Beishamai? Ibailach, Lemimne Chutin, Lemimne Chulios. What should you have done? Counted, right? There's a machlok, how many strings, how many knots. Okay, so they didn't let you take it. But you had it in your hands. Take it, count it, put it back. Right? Not so hard, not so much information. So at least when it comes to archaeology, right? It's pretty explicit in the Gemara, right? They're all telling you, hey, look, if you get the chance to prove something based on archaeology, go ahead. And in fact, if you look, the Smog had a similar case. Right? The Smog was dealing with the case of Tfilin of Rashi or Tfilin of Rabbeinu Tam. We call Makom Nogu Beretz Edom Eretz Yisrael Ishmael Kedivrei Rabbeinu Shlomo. We paskin like Rashi Kedivrei Rabbeinu Moshe. V'gam Shalchu Ksav Eretz Yisrael Shenafla. Nemeshal Kever Yecheskel that they found right the Kever Yecheskel right Umatzu Sham Tfilin Yishenim Ba'od Kisidro Rabbeinu Moshe V'Rashi Zal and they found Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam's. They found Rashi and the Rambam's Tfilin right. Meaning the order of Rashi and the Rambam, not like Rabbeinu Tam. So you see that the Smog runs with it halachically, right? He looks at archaeology and said, oh, okay, sure. Now, how could you respond? Right? So the same way as we said before, they're slightly more difficult, right? So slightly more difficult. Because here, it's harder to say it's a mistake of manuscripts, and it's harder to say that a problem of rove, right? It's the same thing in terms of, you know, if you really, really buy into the notion that Shulchan Aruch changed everything, so then archaeology is the same. But if you don't, right, the practical arguments fall away, at least when it comes to archaeology. So, first, are there any... So, you could either simply make the substantive argument, which is the, you know, Shulchan Aruch changed everything, this is still the way Psach goes, and therefore you ignore archaeology. Or you could come up with technical arguments. Can someone, for example, come up with a technical argument for the Smog, right? How could someone get out of that proof from the Smog, right? The Smog was willing to rely on Rashi's Tfilin, because he found Rashi's Tfilin in the Kibbush of Yechezkel.
Rashi didn't write Rashi's Tfilin. Yeah, Rashi felt that the Pesach was different, but he didn't have his Tfilin right. Well, his Tfilin didn't develop this
year. Okay, that would be strange.
You could find somebody else's
Tfilin. Right.
Wrong Tfilin.
Right? So, you could just say it was a machlokes back then also, and it turns out, I think, at this point, we have actually found both Gersos in different manuscripts, different versions. The Bach had also a clever one on that one. He said, no, why did you find the Tfilin there? Like, why did Tfilin go into the ground? What? Because of Geniza. It's like, aha! I'll prove to you that it's wrong, because the reason they were in the ground is because Geniza. How do you know that's not true? And the response that everyone said back to the Bach is... Yeah, because what do?
You switch them,
right? So this is like the back and forth that goes on. So, but what does this little exercise prove? One thing you could do is simply say, archaeology can always be explained, right? Because lo ra'inu ein araya, right? The fact that we didn't also find Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin doesn't mean the other people didn't have Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin. So, you know, while at first glance you think archaeology is hard to get out of, it's not actually true, right? Just like with manuscripts you can get out of archaeology, you can get out of archaeology, and more than manuscript work, archaeology is infamously inaccurate. Okay. Perhaps, though, the most famous in our world case of this is the case of, since we're already talking about tzitzis, is Tcheles, right? Little background, right? One of the reasons that people think they found Tcheles is because they suddenly found, right, thousands and thousands of these snail shells, right? And they assume that it was for Tcheles, right? Okay. So, Rav Shechter, famously, based on this Gemara, in Rav Basra says, well, we're allowed to follow archaeology for Pesach, and therefore, Rav Shechter, where's Tcheles? And he's arguing on... Who's he arguing with? The Rav, right? This is a case of Rav Shechter versus the Rav, right? Rilchon's not the Rav's Tfilin.
No, I didn't.
Where's Tcheles? Or who says... He doesn't wear Tcheles. He also supports the wearing.
He supports it.
He's... equivocates. We won't get into what he does or doesn't. But okay. But if you look here, on the right-hand side of this, is the top half is the Rav, and the second half is the footnote from Rav Shechter in Nefesh HaRav. Okay? So, the Rav said, Zekama Doro Sheinanu Yodin... Even if we knew that this was Tcheles, it doesn't matter. If something is out of the Masorah, it's out of the Masorah. You can't bring it back into the Masorah via science, archaeology, whatever. Now, this may be a local position within Tcheles, but Letzarech HaAnyan, right? Let's just take this position, right? I'm sure there are people who say this more generally. The Rav at least saying in this position. Okay. So you look now at Rav Shechter, on the other hand, he says like this. Archaeological proofs. This is shocking because the Gemara in Bava Basra, Shamru Rabbanan, Rabbi Barachana, Kol, Abba Chad, etc., etc. V'chein in the Torah, v'shamati mishem mori, din listor seder Rabbeinu Tam, v'shiosim b'tfilin v'kever yechezkel, divrei Rashi, sh'ad rabbi tenu batzal l'mimer, sh'psulim hayu, v'lach nimer v'kivro, kidin tzvarim sh'lulim, etc. And Rav Shechter brings two proofs. One is the Gemara in Bava Basra, and the second one is the case of the smog, but Rav Shechter is very clever. He doesn't bring proof from the smog. Who does he bring proof from? All the critiques on the smog, because let's go back for a second. Right? If you bring a technical critique of the smog, right, then what does that mean you hold fundamentally? That would work. Right? Right? They had technical ones. Right? Oh, maybe the reason it was in Geniza was because right, it was real the reason you found the ground because it was Geniza. But that shows that fundamentally they're not opposed to taking archaeology into account. Right? So Rosh Hashanah points out it's not just the smog, it's the smog, the bach, the drisha, all fundamentally are willing to take archaeology, and then we have to argue whether it's good archaeology or bad archaeology.
That could stem back to fundamentally no problem with archaeology, but they're stuck with the reality that archaeology points in the wrong
Correct. That's always the response, is maybe that's not really what they mean. What they're saying is that as long as I can get out of the archaeology, I don't like accepting archaeology, and if there's even a shemitz of doubt, right, we stick with the halacha psuka. Correct. But this is Rosh Hashanah's way of, you know, strengthening his own position. Okay. Now, if you want to see really, really creative attempt to negate the power of archaeology, so both Rav Aviner and Rav Chaim Kanievsky have a fascinating reread of the Gemara in Bava Basra that to try to negate the possibility that Halacha believes that archaeology is relevant. So if you look here, time at the Krav, Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, "Babasra ayin dalet, ma'is rabbi Rachana ledidi chazi lima tamisim midbar etc." Umashi be'emes manu mimenu min hashamayim lakach l'misham akaren levar alacha v'gamzivu min hashamayim shelo yala b'daita limno sachutin shchorzed. There is a pashut nearzish ein ratzon hakadosh baruch levar halacha al pi davarze lechatit b'dvar matikim raka idei Torah atmos arach levar halacha. Right? What's his raya? The fact that he didn't have the presence of mind to check out the tzitzis. Why didn't he have the presence of mind? Because God didn't want him to have the presence of mind. Because God doesn't believe in archaeology. What's the slight problem with this in the Gemara? What? They yell at him. Right? Everyone yells at him for not doing it. So this sort of reminds me of last week when Yehuda Brill, right, thought that he knew better than Chazal, right? Chazal thought they could make a mistake, but I know that there was a Masorah that it turned out Chazal were right, and they should never have accepted the possibility that they were fallible. Right? But fine. Okay. So, Techazer, right? We had four issues. Manuscripts, new shitos, changing new positions totally, new numbers of Rishonim on a particular position in archaeology. Fundamentally, they're very similar, right? The basic question at hand is, do you think that something happened to the halachic system such that at this point we rely on the normal protocols of Psak and we don't try to change it based on new information? Or not? Now, you can raise many practical distinctions within them, right? You can claim manuscript work is very fallible, and therefore we should rely on the Hexag we have. You can say that when it comes to new Rishonim, at least in terms of numbers, we shouldn't rely on them because we're not really relying on Rov anyways, and therefore we can give more Tokef to Shulchan Aruch. You can argue that by new Shitos entirely, we can give them some weight, but still, it doesn't mean that we Paskin like them. When it comes to archaeology, you can say, again, there are mistakes, right? You can, in each of the cases, come up with technical reasons. You could also take the fundamental approach and say is that we're stuck with Psak as it is. Or, right, you can take it, as in last week, you can take a case-by-case instance. Now, I think, you know, there is a position out there, right, ascribed to the Chazon Ish, whether or not he held it. It seems to be also a position of Rav Moshe Sternbach that we totally reject new manuscripts, new Rishonim, and even though, in fact, they really use it, but in almost all cases, they are going to reject it. And when it comes to archaeology, you see Rav Chaim Kanievsky and Rav Aviner go to great lengths to write it, reinterpret the Gemara fundamentally. But I think, right, standard poskim, Rav Ovadia, Rav Shechter, recognize that it's, right, in reality, we really do take it in, because historically, everyone always did. Now, that doesn't mean automatically you find a new sheet in the Miri and now we can overturn Shulchan Aruch. It does mean that you have to consider new evidence, and just because something is Shulchan Aruch doesn't mean it's automatically correct if it turns out that evidence is otherwise. That being the case, right, you have to take it. Like we saw in the case of Tfilin, right, there are other explanations out there for why you found the tefillin there. So it's not like just because we find an archaeological piece of evidence, it automatically affects halacha. But I think sort of the conclusion that comes out from mainstream poskim, as opposed to, you know, Daniel Sperber's sort of perception of halacha, which is that no one accepts anything, and, you know, as opposed to what he really wants to do, which is always to bring it in, right? I think mainstream poskim are somewhere in the middle, where they're willing to consider new numbers, new shitos, and new archaeological evidence, That being said, they weigh them just like they would any other position, right? Just because it's a new position doesn't give it more power. And even if we find a few more shitos, that might not always be enough to overturn a psak in Shulchan Aruch, but it is something to consider. And the same in archaeology. In each case, you have to determine, right? Does this archaeological evidence actually determine what I'm trying to get it determined or not? And even if it does, is this the type of halacha that is subject to being overturned, right? The Ravs may have been making a local claim or not. But fundamentally, I think that poskim really are open, or at least, if not all poskim, many poskim are open to it. And I think, right, this is a relatively strong trend in psak, which is to take seriously the evidence that we bring in from, new sources of evidence that we use through whatever. And like I said, you know, I don't think any of this is fundamentally different than bringing in Rishonim or Achronim who we had, who were just not searchable in the same way, so we're not necessarily people's fingertips, right? I don't think the phenomenon of Bar Ilan is any different in the way it affects Halacha. You know, you read a Tshuva by Rav Henkin, you'll see, right? He quotes by Chelek Gimel, Chelek Alres, or using search engines, and even Chelek Alf, Chelek Beis, he's using Raid's Farm, which didn't exist before. Right? He's willing to use it, and, you know, I think it really is rare a posik that won't at least quote the Meiri, and won't, you know, quote a Tshuva that someone finds in Bar Ilan if they happen to show it to him. Okay. That is it for now.